Hey, and welcome to The Living Stone, a digital ministry from Greystone Baptist Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. Here's this week's scripture reading and sermon.
The story of Zacchaeus. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through town. A man there named Zacchaeus, a ruler among tax collectors, was rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was, but being a short man, he couldn't because of the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed up a sycamore tree so that he could see Jesus, who was about to pass that way. When Jesus came to that spot, he looked up and said, "Zacchaeus, come down at once. I must stay in your home today." So Zacchaeus came down at once, happy to welcome Jesus. Everyone who saw this grumbled, saying, "He has gone to be a guest of the sinner." Zacchaeus stopped and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anyone, I repay them four times as much." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this household, because he too is a son of Abraham. The human one came to seek and save the lost."
The parable of the banquet feast. Jesus said to him, "A man gave a big dinner. He invited many people. When it was time to eat, he sent his servant to tell the guests, 'Come, the food is ready.' But all the guests said that they could not come. Each one made an excuse. The first one said, 'I have just bought a field, so I must go look at it. Please excuse me.' Another man said, 'I have just bought 5 pairs of work animals, and I must go and try them out. Please excuse me.' A third man said, 'I just got married. I can't come.' So the servant returned and told his master what happened. The master was angry. He said, 'Hurry, go into the streets and alleys of the town. Bring me the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame.' Later, the servant said to him, 'Master, I did what you told me to do, but we still have places for more people.' The master said to the servant, 'Go out to the highways and country roads. Tell the people there to come. I want my house to be full. I tell you, not one of those people I invited first will eat any of this food I prepared.'"
Jesus took a cup of wine in his hands and gave thanks to God. Then he told the apostles, "Take this wine and share it with each other. I tell you that I will not drink any more wine until God's kingdom comes." Jesus took some bread in his hand and gave thanks for it. He broke the bread and handed it to his apostles. Then he said, "This is my body, which is given for you. Eat this as a way of remembering me." After the meal, he took another cup of wine in his hands. Then he said, "This is my body. It is poured out for you." And with it, God makes his new agreement. So during the meal, Jesus got up, removed his outer garment, and wrapped a towel around his waist. He put some water into a large bowl. Then he began washing his disciples' feet and drying them with the towel he was wearing. But when he came to Simon Peter, he asked, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "You don't really know what I'm doing, but later you will understand." "You will never wash my feet," Peter replied. "If I don't wash your feet," Jesus told him, "you don't really belong to me." Peter said, "Lord, don't wash just my feet. Wash my hands and my head." Jesus answered, "People who have bathed and are clean all over need to wash just their feet. And you, my disciples, are clean except for one of you." Jesus knew who would betray him. That is why he said, "Except for one of you." After Jesus had washed his disciples' feet and had put his outer garment back on, he sat down again, then said, "Do you understand what I have done? You call me your teacher and Lord, and you should, because that is who I am. And if your Lord and your teacher has washed your feet, you should do the same for each other. I have set the example, and you should do for each other exactly what I have done for you." The disciples likely ate with Jesus more often than anyone else as they gathered to share the Passover meal together.
One evening, Peter said, "I'm going out to fish." His friends said, "We'll go with you." They got into their boat and fished and fished and fished. They fished all night but caught nothing. Early in the morning, a man stood on the shore. He called out to them, "Friends, have you caught any fish?" "No," they answered. He said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some." When they did, they couldn't haul the net in because there were so many fish. Suddenly, Peter realized that the man on the shore was Jesus. He jumped out of the boat into the water and swam to shore. The other disciples followed him into the shore with the boat and the fish. When they landed, they saw a fire. There were fish cooking over the fire and some bread. Jesus said, "Bring some of the fish you just caught." Peter climbed back into the boat and dragged the net to the shore. There were 153 large fish. Jesus took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. After the fireside breakfast, Jesus said to Peter, "Do you love me?" "Yes, Lord," he said. "You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Peter, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord," he said. "You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." Again, Jesus said, "Peter, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Follow me."
So I ask you, what is your favorite place to eat? Y'all can tell me. Okay. So I heard some like specific restaurants, some specific places. I heard some chain restaurants. I heard some smaller ones. Some little family-owned places. Chick-fil-A, I knew that one was coming from our young people. All right, so when I think about some of my favorite places to eat, I remember my grandmother's kitchen. The smell of chicken and pastry with a side of fried cornbread that I have yet to perfect on my own. Or Neasia, just down the street, where the smell of their green curry takes me back to Thailand on a mission immersion trip that I took with seminary. Sola, right across the street, is one of my favorites in the summer when the heirloom tomatoes are in, because those BLTs are amazing. But one of my all-time favorite places to eat is a little place in Atlanta. Have you ever been to Atlanta? Do you have favorite restaurants there? Y'all can guess. Does anybody have a guess as to what mine is? It is not the Varsity with an F-O frosted orange. It is not. I knew that would be somebody's guess. Okay, so let me tell you. We could stand here all day and guess. You're never gonna get it. No. Good guess. But no, you're not. I promise. Nobody's gonna get it. And the reason you're not going to get it is because it's not a place that you would necessarily expect your children's minister to find as her favorite restaurant. No, not that one. So the restaurant is called The Vortex. It's in a little Five Points part of Atlanta. To understand this restaurant, you first have to understand the area of Little Five Points. This is an eclectic area. It's where all of the hippies and the bikers and the grunge and the hip young people and the homeless all converge into one little spot in Atlanta. So the Vortex sits on one of the corners of the Five Points. The outside of the restaurant looks like a giant skull. It has swirling red and white eyeballs that swirl around, and you enter this restaurant through the mouth of the skull. Again, not a place you would expect to find me, right? Inside, it gets even better. Inside the decor, the best way I can describe this to you is it looks like Harley Davidson and Jerry Garcia, like combined efforts to decorate this place. It's super, super colorful. There's skeletons everywhere, riding motorcycles, sitting on toilets. There's art everywhere. It's very eclectic and very fun. Their menu comes with a supplemental piece. It's a little bit crass. It's very funny. I can't read it to you because it's not appropriate for our young ones. It has some words in there that maybe they shouldn't say. But I do secretly, y'all, I'm letting you into all my secrets, keep a copy of the supplemental part of their menu in my office in a file folder called Things That Make Me Smile. And if I'm having a bad day, I pull it out and read it for a good laugh. So now you're probably wondering, why in the world is this ridiculous place your favorite? As much as I love their Jamaican jerk chicken and the fried zucchini chips, that's not why I go. I love this quirky place because so many different people from so many different walks of life all come together. Every time I've ever eaten there, my table has been full of friends. It's been full of laughter and full of joy. The joy in this place is contagious. It is hard not to be happy there. If it's too loud, there's a patio. There is a place for everyone. Usually when my friends and I visited the Vortex, it was followed by a trip across the street and around the back corner to a little coffee house called IF. IF Coffee House exists not only to serve coffee, of course, but it is a place for local artists to come and play. It's a place to listen to music and enjoy the company of friends, but it's also a place for the homeless in the area to come, get out of the elements, and enjoy a cup of water, a cup of coffee, a hot chocolate, maybe even a soda. But in short, eating at the Vortex, or IF, either together or separate, it was an experience, and that's why I loved it. It was an experience worth repeating. So as a seminarian, I went often because the experience meant far more to me than the food I ate. So neither one of these places, the Vortex or IF Coffee House, are really a place that you would expect to find me or Jesus. That is precisely why Jesus would have actually eaten there. If Jesus were walking the earth today, I think that Jesus would have a grand old time at the Vortex eating with all these people from all different walks of life. Jesus ate with sinners, Jesus ate with outcasts, with the faithful, with the searching, with the misguided, those with mixed up priorities, and those who denied him. Jesus purposely ate with an array, a wide array of people. And with each meal, the experience was far more important than the food on the table. So let's start here. Zacchaeus. Maybe he wanted to see the healer that everybody else had talked about so much. Maybe he was just tired of being left out. Maybe he was simply curious. Whatever the reason, Jesus made sure that he saw Jesus that day. How surprised he must have been when Jesus called him down out of that tree and invited him to a meal together. While everyone else was talking and wondering why in the world Jesus would be eating with this sinner, this despised person that nobody else liked and certainly didn't want to eat with, Jesus and Zacchaeus were seated at a table for two. At this table, Zacchaeus experienced radical, life-changing grace. And with this gift of grace, Zacchaeus found hope, a hope that he never knew existed. It's kind of amazing that a simple meal and a conversation can change a person's life so drastically. The big picnic. When everyone is invited, it's easy to worry if there will be enough for everyone to eat. We've all been there. We've all hosted that event, and more people showed up than we were counting on, and we were just hoping and praying that the food would last. Sometimes it's easy to feel that way about God's love, too. Is there truly enough for everyone? Will there be enough love for me and my family if God gives love to some of those other people, those people that maybe don't deserve it as much as I do? But through the gift of a child's lunch, Jesus proved just this. Yes, there's actually more than enough for everyone. God's love is so abundant that there are even leftovers. The thing is, Jesus didn't do this all on his own. He enlisted the help of the disciples to distribute the food and to collect those leftovers. And though I certainly believe that Jesus could and did actually literally multiply that food, I have to imagine that some of those people in the crowd had food that they had tucked away. They were a little bit reluctant to pull it out because they only had enough for their few people. They weren't sure that they wanted to share. But when the child shared, I can imagine many in that crowd got brave enough to pull out their food. And perhaps they began sharing too. Once the child was brave enough and kind enough to share his food, they were a little bit more willing to share what they had brought. Those gathered on the hillside that day may have eaten bread and fish, but what they experienced was the generosity and the abundance of God's love. The great banquet feast. Just as Jesus ate at the home of sinners and shared a meal with all who had gathered on that hillside, he also ate with the Pharisees or the religious leaders. But even these religious leaders learned a lot when they ate with Jesus. All in one dinner party, Jesus healed a man who was sick on the Sabbath, breaking Jewish law, but helping others see that helping others see that helping someone else was more important than the law itself, or what day it was. And then noticing that all of the guests were vying for that most important seat at the table, Jesus taught them that the humble are exalted and the stranger is welcome and all are invited. But he doesn't stop there. He continues with another parable. This one of a rich man who was throwing a party. His invite list was long, but when it was time for the party, all of the guests made excuses as to why they couldn't come. The party host didn't have patience for this, and he sent his servant out into the town to gather those who were never invited anywhere, inviting them to the party. And when all of these people came, there was still room for more, so he sent his servant further out into the countryside. And people who were otherwise ignored were suddenly invited. Jesus told the Pharisee and his guests that God's love is for everyone. There is literally no one who is not invited. There are no assigned seats, no kids' table for them to sit separate. Everyone is seated together to experience God's love firsthand. We don't know what was served at this dinner party. We can imagine the dates and the figs and the bread and the fish and all of those things. But it doesn't really matter, because what these guests experienced was radical inclusion, knowing that everyone is indeed invited and everyone has a place at the table. Jesus likely ate with his disciples more than he ate with anyone else. As they gathered to share a Passover meal, they had no idea that this meal would be one to remember. They had eaten this meal together before. But as they ate, Jesus took the bread and the wine that was on that table and he gave it new meaning. The disciples certainly didn't fully understand all that Jesus was telling them, but what they did understand is that their leader, their teacher, their friend was kneeling in front of them washing their feet. He was washing the dust and the dirt from their feet. As he washed their feet, they witnessed humility from the greatest. They experienced the kind of love that serves without asking for recognition, the kind of love that serves out of love, not obligation. And soon the disciples will realize that what they experienced that night was an invitation to a new covenant, a new community. And it was this that would carry them through the next days and would carry this story to us even today. They thought their meals with Jesus were over. They had returned to the water to fish. It's what they knew. It's what brought them comfort. But they were surprised by a voice in the distance. It was Jesus who was waiting on the shore with them, or waiting on the shore with a blanket and fish on the fire, breakfast ready to be served. As they joined him, they added their catch to the fire, and they ate together. Breakfast of fish and bread. As they gathered around the fire and they filled their bellies, Jesus filled their hearts. As Jesus asked Peter three separate times, "Do you love me?" Jesus offered forgiveness, the likes of which had never been experienced before. And along with forgiveness, Jesus offered Peter and the rest of the disciples direction. Directions to feed his sheep and to tend his lambs. They experienced forgiveness and guidance. They now understood that it was up to them to share God's love and grace and forgiveness and generosity and hope and inclusion and invitation with others. So in our own homes and even here at church, we're surrounded by tables. Tables where we gather to eat, to make friends, to create family. Who is invited to these tables? Are we collectively offering the radical inclusion and invitation to our own tables? Are we being the humble servant that Jesus modeled so well? Are we serving grace and forgiveness and hope and generosity to all? So who are the lonely, the downtrodden, the invisible, the scarred, the outcast among us that deserve an invitation to join us? Is there somebody at school that you can invite to come sit at your table at lunch or invite to come play with you at recess, invite to your home to come and play with you? Is there a coworker who really rubs you the wrong way that you can invite to coffee? Is there a neighbor down the street who always seems to be in a bad mood or perhaps just looks lonely? Can you invite them over for a slice of pie? Even more boldly, can you invite the homeless guy on the corner into a restaurant and serve them a meal? Our theme verse for this weekend was Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." Together as campers, we talked about how sometimes, even when our bellies are full, our hearts and souls are empty. They're hungry for something different. The stories that we explored this weekend, and again this morning, show us what that love really looks like. So here's your question. Are you ready to come to the table and eat with Jesus? Can you host a banquet feast and invite those who are usually left out? Can you offer the grace and hope to the Zacchaeuses in your life? What do you have that you can share with others, like that child on the hillside? How can you be a humble servant, serving out of love and not obligation? Is there someone whom you need to offer forgiveness? Or do you yourself need to accept the forgiveness that someone is offering you? Are you ready to come to the table and to share the grace with others?